Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and today's conversation is with Melanie Stennett, Assistant Director of the Office of Professional Responsibility and Security Operations at the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Alan Heath. Melanie, given your previous leadership role, as you mentioned, you were just the CFO for the Bureau. What are some of the key procurement challenges ATF faces, and what has the Bureau done to enhance its procurement capabilities?
Well, one of the key procurement challenges is making sure you can get people on board to do the job. And the procurement field is one where they are worth their weight in gold. And so they can go many places in the government because their skill set is portable. And the procurement professionals you want are the ones who have the federal acquisition certification in contracting, because that's what they have to do their job. So we have the problem of being able to recruit and retain qualified acquisition professionals. And then beyond the FACC certifications and the regular training they have to keep that up, we also just need training budgets to give them other training courses that will enhance their ability to do their job that aren't necessarily just purely contract related. And unfortunately, in some of the lean budget years that we're going to start to see, those training budgets may not be there. We need for our workforce to have a better understanding of the acquisition process, because to be able to use your acquisition dollars wisely, you have to have a good acquisition plan, and you have to have it planned out in advance so that you're not always running up against a gun and having to put your money in a contract vehicle that costs more because maybe there's more overhead, or maybe you didn't have the best competition and you're not getting the best price. So it's not just having good acquisition professionals, but it's having them put out the policy guidance so people know what to do. There's also, from my perspective, making sure that the acquisition professionals really understand the mission of ATF. And that's hard because they're in headquarters and the mission is done a lot out in the field. And so there's not a real good translation of what is it that you're buying in terms of goods and services that helps perform that mission. And so what can you do to help make sure you can buy them the stuff they need and not be putting obstacles in their way? So there needs to be education on both parts. The customers need to know the process, but the people that do the process need to know why the customers need what they need. What we've actually done to try to enhance our abilities to get the right people on board is to recruit from colleges and universities and militaries that have good acquisition programs, to work with the department to establish a formal acquisition intern program, and to also try to establish a training fund for our acquisition staff.
Melanie, you've mentioned a couple times now that ATF is a geographically diverse organization. So it kind of lends itself to being a decentralized organization, operating over 24 field offices, as you mentioned, and even internationally. How does the Bureau impart consistent management policies and practices to the field offices as well back to the headquarters?
Well, to start with, the decentralized portion of that would probably be mostly in the field where the SACs are located. And they're responsible for managing basically their operational budget, which would be things like supplies and travel and overtime, agent cashier. And they're overseen by an assistant director for field operations. So they kind of monitor that budget and make sure that if there's any deficiencies, you know, they can maybe resolve that within the whole field operations budget. So that's really not that hard a budget to manage. Expenses related to things like rental property space, our cars, our fleet, equipment, firearms, ammunition are centralized in headquarters as common accounts. And so they're a little bit easier to monitor, but still you have to be on top of it through some of the spending reports that we have to make sure that you're on track for spending for the year. The strategic leadership team that we have in headquarters, that's composed of the director and the deputy as well as the assistant directors, they basically manage and oversee the core functions, and they're briefed periodically on where we are in the budget. And if it looks like there's a priority that we need money for, you know, we try to scrub the budget as much as we can in that July timeframe and find the extra dollars and put it towards a priority. In terms of making sure there's consistent policies out there, we have an ATF's directive system to communicate our Bureau policies and procedures and responsibilities. And that was a program that the Office of Management actually oversees as well. And we have a small directive shops, which does miracles in terms of getting getting this stuff down on paper and letting our ADs know when it's time to update their directorates and making sure that what's in there is relevant information, because what tends to happen when somebody updates a directive is they want to put their own standard operating procedures in there. And I will tell you, as an attorney working in the field, if you get too much stuff in there that doesn't apply to the line employees out there doing the mission, they're not going to have time to find it. And so they're going to go to their attorneys and ask their attorneys to basically interpret policy. So it's really important to get the relevant information in there and get the stuff updated and out as quickly as possible. And I found in preparing for this interview that in the fall of 2009, DOJ's Office of Records Management Policy actually looked at 6 federal agencies and 7 DOJ components to kind of compile best practices in formulating policies. And BOP and the FBI and ATF were found to be among the highest performers of DOJ components. And the study actually commended ATF for being process-driven, having a strong grasp of roles and clear authority and support, and communicating very effectively in their policy. And that's something I'm very proud of for the ladies in my director's shop who actually do the work there.
That's excellent. That's excellent. So let's talk about the people then. Your workforce is ATF's core resource, as you mentioned. So what unique steps do you take to attract and maintain a high quality and professional workforce?
Well, we do have, I think I mentioned, a pay banded system. It's called our pay demonstration project, and it probably employs right now somewhere over 250 people. And that project allows us to pay some financial incentives to recruit and retain employees in those positions. And there is still a broader retention and recruitment ability for some other professions that aren't in the pay demo project as well. But pay demo also allows us to give some bonuses for job-related certificates and licenses and pay for performance bonuses. We also have a number of non-monetary things that are available that we think are an incentive to work at ATF. We have the public transportation incentive. We have a health improvement program, which pays some of the gym memberships out in the field. We have a gym in our headquarters office. There's a certain amount of time, I want to say 3 hours a week, that you can spend, you know, administrative time to go down and actually use the gym. And that's a biggie, I think. We try wherever we can to recognize our employees. We give out certificates of appointments to people in supervisory positions, and those, you would not believe it, are a big thing. The time and grade or time and service awards are really big, and our director has asked that if we have town hall meetings, he have those given to him in advance so he can give them out at the meeting and recognize folks. Our director is trying to come up with a plan now to where someone, if they've done a really good job for ATF, he hears about it, he gets briefed on it, and then he goes down and actually congratulates the person and talks with them, which I think will be huge. And of course, we have the regular employee assistance programs that I think most agencies have. We try to incorporate diversity into our staff and our organization through our various hiring programs. We have a merit promotion board, which we use to recruit and select candidates with civil service competitive status. We have a delegated examining unit, which we use to hire candidates who don't have competitive status either within or outside of the government. We have a recruitment and hiring center, which actually hires our special agents and our industry operations investigators under an accepted service authority. We try to target some of those announcements to specific areas, like if we're at a historically black university doing a recruitment event, you know, we bring an announcement out so that they can apply for the job and take the ATF special agent exam. So we try to target our recruitment to get more diversity.
Very good. Given ATF's critical mission, would you tell us more about your efforts to modernize its business processes and systems to improve mission effectiveness and transparency? And in what areas have you re-engineered those business processes bureau-wide?
Okay, well, we've already talked about UFMS, which is a biggie for modernizing. And as I said, we're taking the advantage of UFMS to re-engineer some of that business process. And the beauty about that is at least this part of the implementation is funded out of the department. So I got re-engineered process without the money. Isn't that great? We already have a really good time and attendance system called WebTA, and that runs very smooth. Most of our other systems are really not ATF related to ATF financial systems per se. We have systems that deal with how we manage our cases within ATF, and we also have systems that the public uses or other law enforcement agencies use. And so we are getting money through a number of various resources to continue to modernize our National Tracing Center, which is, again, the system that we use to trace firearms and develop leads for how firearms trafficking might be occurring. And we also have gotten some money to put more NIBIN machines out in the state and local population. We have a bomb arson tracking system that we've spent money on and that we have the state and locals using to enter information about bombs and arsons. And we have our own case management system that we're trying to find a new avenue for that. Our system is a customized system, and we need to find probably more of a COTS product or a solution that other government agencies use. And we have systems at the Federal Firearms Licensing Center and the Explosives Licensing Center. So we have a lot of different systems related to law enforcement and to the public that we continue to invest in and upgrade.
Strong leadership development and succession planning are key to ensuring the future success of ATF. And when we got to talking about having you on, I understood that you had just done a month, a 30-day detail at the U.S. Marshals Service. I was wondering, would you tell us about that experience? What are some of the benefits for organizations pursuing this sort of cross-training of leadership development? And how has your previous leadership role in the Bureau complemented your current role?
Okay. Well, the detail at the Marshals Service was probably one of the best things I ever did. And I really have to compliment Deputy Director Melson for asking us to do that, because I'm not sure I ever would have thought of it on my own. But he started the idea back at the beginning of the fiscal year. And so I decided to go out to some colleagues and some people that I respected to see, hey, what can I do at your agency? So I talked with Jolene Loria Sullins. I talked to Rich Haley, who's the CFO at the FBI. And then I talked to Chris Dudley, the Deputy Director of the Marshals Service, who I had just met about 6 months before. And of the three, Chris had the one that I thought would take what I currently knew and what I had done for years in ATF and build on it. So he told me that they were going to put a new governance process in place in the Marshals Service, especially coming at a key time because they got 700 new positions with their budget this year and the money that comes along with that. And they needed to decide how to invest that money. And the process was going to entail bringing people in from the districts and having them look at some issues, and then having the headquarters assistant directors look at the same issues and basically make recommendations to the director of the Marshals Service. And I thought that was interesting because I'd never been in a situation where I could watch a new process put into place. So I went over and looked at that. And at the same time, I knew they were looking at reinvigorating their strategic planning office. They had some accountability issues that they wanted to nail down, how to implement a stronger culture of accountability within the Marshals Service. I talked with the woman that does their compliance reviews, and they had just given her the A123 process. And so all of these were things that I either knew something about or wanted to know something about. And so I just kind of threw myself into the project. I think Chris was afraid that I didn't get much out of it, and they got everything out of it. And I networked so much and took some best practices back to ATF. I tried to interview people involved in their governance process and give Chris and the folks there some guidance on where I thought they needed to tweak it a little more, what worked well, what didn't. But the bottom line was I ended up making a lot of good friends and a lot of good colleagues in a very short period of time, which I thought was very valuable. Chris and the director at the Marshals Service thought it was such a great idea that they want to continue this cross-agency detail. And so I have said that I will take it back to ATF and I will come up with a plan so that we can continue the details. My other leadership experiences, I worked in the Office of Chief Counsel. I had a strong background in the laws that ATF enforces and how they fit into the programs that we have within ATF. I worked, oversaw the ethics program when I was the Deputy Chief Counsel. I, you know, have a strong background in integrity issues. I think moving on into the CFO field, I thought I knew about budget and audit till I got into that job, and I learned far more. I didn't even know what a financial system did that much, and now I know probably more than I ever want to know. It all just kind of fits together. It kind of reminds me when I was in college, and I was a history major, but I also took a lot of English and philosophy and religion courses, and by the second year, all the ideas started to cross and overlap, and I feel the same way here. I think I've got such a strong background in things related to integrity and to the programs that we're going to have to review both at the IG level and at the OPRSO level. You know, I think I have a strong background in building management, which kind of morphs over into that whole emergency management. You know, the backgrounds kind of go hand in hand with the HR function. I just think everything I've done up to this point has made me a stronger executive, and I keep saying I can't wait to see where they're going to move me next.
What does the future hold for ATF? We will ask Melanie Stennett Assistant Director, Office of Professional Responsibility and Security Operations at the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.